Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, it's 3/24/2015, as we move on to March, April. We're moving to April.
Yeah.
My birthday's coming up.
Oh, happy birthday.
April 5th.
That's very nice.
Easter.
It's Easter?
Yeah, my birthday's on Easter.
Always?
No, it's impossible. I wrote this up in the New Agenda newsletter. It's screwy the way they pick Easter.
Well, you should just join me with the Jewish calendar. That's a whole different thing. You know, sometimes you get like Hanukkah in November, sometimes it's in January.
Is this all based on the, I guess, on the equinox and a bunch of pagan crap?
The lunar cycle, actually, the Jewish calendar's lunar cycle.
Okay.
So, you know, it's actually interesting. You mentioned the calendar, you mentioned that it's coming into April. April, I don't know, maybe it's 4th or 5th, or maybe the 8th. Is the start of earnings seasons again. And we have Alcoa coming out, you know, the whole rigmarole.
Here we go again.
Yep. So
it seems as though at least three or four times a year this happens.
Yeah, well, it's quarterly. That's what happens, funny as it may be.
I'm just kidding.
Well, I knew that. But here's the story. So Goldman Sachs comes out with a piece today, and it talks about how during the 4 weeks leading up until earnings releases by companies, they're not allowed to do any share buybacks. And there's a potential to have a lull in the markets overall because companies, as you get closer to this point and the massive amount of companies that will report, aren't going to be doing their share buybacks or announcements of any share buybacks.
Yeah, I was reading about this.
It's kind of interesting in that if we do agree that, you know, all this money is being spent by companies to do share buybacks and a good chunk of the daily volume is by companies, and if they can't do it, you know, who's the incremental buyer? So they're saying there could be
a going to trigger a collapse.
If it does trigger a collapse, all that's going to happen is you're going to see a downward move in the next, we'll call it 4 weeks or so, or 5 weeks, starting soon. And then what will happen is once that period is lifted, companies go right back to buying. So now they get it at cheaper prices. Maybe it's a process. Maybe they know this is going to happen.
They could also get screwed. There could be a run-up for some unknown reason.
Right, exactly.
Peace in the Middle East.
Right. Well, the run-up will probably happen because now that this information is out from Goldman, these things never seem to happen when the cat's out of the bag.
Yes, once Goldman and now figured out,
yeah,
like oil at 200, it's the end of it.
Yeah, exactly. So very whippy action in the markets today. There was this kind of movement, this thrusting upward today, and then this dropping down and thrusting upward every I don't know, call it 10 minutes in the market today. It was kind of weird. It's like something is coming. I'm not sure what it is and what it can be, but it was very strange. It's very spiky high and low. We finished on close to the low today for the markets. They tried to move higher, and this is after massive moves on the market last week after Janet Yellen took the word patient, or actually the Fed in total.
Patience.
Yeah, they took the word patience out of their commentary on when they're going to raise rates. But she did say in her press conference that while they remove the word patience, that doesn't mean they're not impatient.
Right. She made some sort of she made it clear that they're taking the word out, but it doesn't mean that it's really out.
Right. She made it very.
It's only out in reality, but not in spirit.
Right.
Something like that.
So they made it very clear that they want to be unclear, is what I thought. They're trying to keep us guessing. Because now they're on a 2% inflation kick, back to that. They want to see more improvement in the job market, which is, you know, don't forget, they moved from 6.5% some time ago, their target, to 5.5. And now that we got to 5.5, they're like, well, maybe we could do a little better. Now, what was interesting that happened is that as soon as she started talking about that, there was just a vertical move of the markets. I mean, just straight up in the air. And that was on a Wednesday, I suppose. Yeah, it was a Wednesday, the second day of the Fed meeting when the rate announcement came out. Markets loved it. However, the dollar didn't seem to really love it. The dollar was being sold like crazy. Actually, sold like crazy. The euro was moving up like crazy. I think it was one of the biggest drops in the dollar in years.
Yeah.
They were buying the crap out of bonds. They were buying the crap out of everything. And even oil spiked about 4 or 5% that day. So we saw at the end of that day, it was really interesting because we were getting really close to about 110 on the euro. And then after the market closed, even though currencies are open all the time, there was this gigantic spike, like stops were blown out on the euro and the yen. And the dollar kept on going down and just really charged right through there. So the yen got really close to that again today, and the euro as well. The euro got close to about 110, spiked a little bit, and then came right back down to about 109. So I think we're about 109.30 or something like that.
109.17 as we speak.
On the euro. But that's a big move from where we were. We were at 104 just a week ago.
103.
Yeah. Crazy, huh?
Yeah. Well, that's a desperation.
Yeah, and two-year bonds are under, the 10-year bonds are under 2% again. The two-year bonds at, I think, 0.58%.
Hmm.
Interesting. So, you know, what we've been seeing is this is kind of a, I guess I call it an old standard in the markets. You have a something called a three-day rule. Watch for a stock to move down because of earnings or news or some other item for 2 or 3 days. Then, as it starts basing out, the three-day rule says, okay, you could start maybe nibbling in and buying into it. Usually the first day, it's like, oh, the news is there. The second day, people maybe get their newspapers, they read the news, and they oh, look at how bad it's doing. I'm going to sell it out. The third day, you finally get those people to flush out, and then that's when you start stepping in. This is kind of a standard, the three-day rule.
Another standard of it that the insiders use to extract people from their money.
Right. Well, that three-day rule seems to get down to the 1 to 2 day rule now. You know, everything compresses, right?
It's like margins, the way margins work.
Right. So now we're about 1 to 2 day rule, and I was thinking about a couple of good examples. One of them is Tiffany's. Tiffany's came out with an earnings report, and they missed, and they didn't do so well, and they were down about 4% or so. This is after they got hit last time as well, and, you know, there was not a lot of anticipation of a good number from Tiffany. Took about 1 day, and the stock was up, I think, after it was down about 3% on the day of the earnings, it was up like 6% the next day and then followed through again up a couple of percent the next day. Everything is compressing. Like, for example, when you see market reactions, remember the whole, Ebola scare. Oh my gosh, terrible day. And then all of a sudden it flips around. Oh, not there anymore. Short memories these days. What is this
a sign of? I mean, this must be a phenomenon that happens every so often before an upsurge or a down surge or
I think it's there's still a lot of people who are like, damn, I missed the rally in maybe a stock or maybe
it's just panicky. Yeah. It's a panicky technique.
Yeah, exactly what it is. Well, it's also short squeezes. So you get this move down pretty dramatically on some numbers. And then all of a sudden everybody's like, well, you know, the shorts are very shaky because you see things that don't really make sense. You see stocks that miss their earnings and everything looks ugly. Stock moves down, all of a sudden turns around. Well, if you're a short in a position and all of a sudden on all this bad news, a stock starts turning and moving higher, you want to get out while the going's good. You know, Shake Shack.
What's gonna happen.
Yeah, Shake Shack was a great example. We were short on that stock. It was down 8% on the news, on the earnings, and it started creeping up all day. I'm like, what is going on here? Creeping up. By the end of the day, it was up like 1%.
So you got out?
Yeah, we were out before that because we were kind of worrying, like, hey, what's going on here? And you sometimes see this, you know, during the day, you see that there is a move lower by markets in the early morning. By midday, it starts creeping up. People are freaking out a little bit. Let me take my profits, get the hell out of this. But yet you still have companies that are, again, back to buybacks. They're buying like crazy. There's some cash on the sidelines. And don't forget, you still have a lot of foreign governments and foreigners that are all just thrilled about the U.S. economy. And they're saying, hey, you know what? How bad can it be? Maybe this is the end of the mess. So what you see is that people are very apt to do some buying. And not to mention that you have a lot less volume on the markets and there's a lot less inventory available. Listen, Merck announced another $10 billion buyback tonight. $10 billion. That's like 8% of the company, I think.
Wow.
So that's going to do well for their earnings. And the company's going to have, obviously, a hand under the price for some time. you know, barring any other good news that may come out about maybe some kind of drug or, you know, earnings, whatever it may be. So, you know, a lot of this is due to the fact that you have a zero interest rate situation. You have foreign companies and foreign governments that are buying into equities. We know that Japan announced some time ago that they're going to be deploying a lot of money into U.S. equities and equities around the world. You know, people want out of certain areas also around the world. They move into the U.S. The U.S. has been underperforming this year dramatically, and maybe there's some rotation going on. So there's a lot of that going on underneath everything. But there's also the underlying optimism that, Tiffany hasn't done well, and, you know, two quarters in a row they really haven't done well. Maybe it's their time next quarter. Let's get in early. So
it's kind of a form of bottom feeding, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's buy the dip. It's buy the dip, and if it doesn't work, just get the hell out. But if it works, just go with it, and then it doesn't matter what the news was. It's just the stock price is really just momentum is leading investors in. And really, if you see really bad news on a stock, right, and you're thinking about buying it, and, you know, regardless of the news, the stock moves up. At the end of the day, it's all that the only thing that matters is price, right? If you didn't know the news, if you had no idea what the news was and the stock is moving up and it sees a good chart and you're looking at the momentum, you buy in.
Which I think goes on a lot.
Yeah, a tremendous amount. Technical analysis, that's all it's about. Look for that support line. And so, you know, who's to say whether the stock is oversold, overbought? Fact is that the trend is your friend, right? I mean, to put that on there. I mean, you just follow the bouncing ball where things are leading. So, now oil is doing that. We saw that everybody's coming out with their calls for $40 oil, $20 oil, whatever it may be. We saw that last week an enormous amount of inventory hit. I mean, just, I think, 10 million barrels, and oil is just getting, you know, getting killed. And then all of a sudden that dollar move, where the dollar came down and oil's priced in dollars, really helped the shares move up higher. And I think from the low, oil's up something like 7 or 8%. Question is whether the low is hit. Tonight we saw that the API numbers of inventory came out only a 4 million barrel build, which is half of what the build was last week. So there's some legs to this whole thing. We actually are long oil from pretty much the low. I said it can't go much lower than this. It just can't. And again, that's the same theory. How much lower can it go? I'm going to buy in. If it doesn't work out, I'll get out. If it starts moving with me, I'll add to it.
Well, good luck with that oil play.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's see. Apple. So Apple came out, something about, did you read this story about?
I just saw it on this list here and I haven't, no.
Something about only shipping about 50% of the potential watches due to manufacturing issues. Something to do with, I don't know, is it glass or something's going on that they have some manufacturing issue. So, you know, they're only going to, now who knows if they're just doing this to create this artificial.
They love doing that.
Yeah, don't they?
It's a ploy and they've done it before.
Yeah, supply constraint.
And other people do it too.
Yeah. Hey,
there's not going to be enough. What are we going to do?
And
first serve.
Yeah, better than that, that gets more lines, doesn't it? People wait in lines to get the product even more.
They would love to get a line for this watch.
you remember always watching the lines on the announcements of like a new iPhone, the lines around the block, and then they announce a Windows phone and like there's crickets.
Yeah.
There's no one to be found anywhere.
But they, you know, Microsoft, in fact, I just wrote a column for PC Magazine about this. Because Microsoft decided they wanted to create a more universal Windows Phone operating system, and they to the point where they could take the Windows 10 phone OS and put it on your Android phone, which I think is not doable. I know the question is, which is the question I asked: who wants it?
Who wants it, and who's going to allow it? Why would they allow that? Isn't part of the whole profit motive for Google to put the Android system on the phones part of the process? I don't get it.
Well, whatever the case, this is what they were planning. And I just didn't think it had any legs or the idea was any good. And one of the problems is people aren't interested in this OS, and Microsoft doesn't seem to understand how to make them interested, which is what they used to be able to do. And I mentioned in this column that if they could go find the guys who did the Windows 95 rollout, and that's only 20 years ago, the Windows 95 rollout was astonishing. They had the whole world was involved with this, and there was lines. There were lines.
Yeah, but there were no other options. What other options were there? You didn't have these other OSs out there.
Yeah, but why get in line for something that you can just wait a week for? I mean, what's the rush? Why do I have to get Windows 95 that night at midnight? It makes no sense. None of these lines make any sense to me. It's like, why am I wasting my time standing in a long line, which is an, it makes you look like a cow, you know, waiting to get slaughtered, which is kind of true. It just makes never made any sense, but they managed to pull it off, and Microsoft, and I think they did with maybe one other operating system, like maybe 98. They got people to line up to buy the product. Now, Apple's managed to do this over and over again, using every trick they can, but Microsoft can't anymore. So they've lost talent somewhere along the lines, and they don't even seem to know.
Yeah. Well, Microsoft has become more of a utility than it has anything else, right? I mean, and not only that, they've had so many bad rollouts that I think people always want to wait. I mean, I don't know about you, but if I don't have to ever leave Windows 7, I'm not going to. If I'm not forced out of it somehow, it works just fine.
Well, yeah, it does.
I mean, there's nothing I can imagine. All I need Windows 7 for, essentially, is to run just a bunch of programs, and the programs are the ones that have to be upgraded. Now, when it comes to the OS, I mean, the same thing when it comes to Apple with their OS upgrades, but the iPhone is a little bit different. Now you have a different piece of equipment. You know, the difference is, I think that a hardware upgrade or a hardware change is much different than a software change, which happens, you know, internally. You don't have to wait for it. You just get it and click a button and upgrade. Versus a hardware, you have to go pick it up somewhere. You can't just like have it just all of a sudden your phone morph into a new phone, which would be kind of cool, actually. How great would that be?
Android adds new operating systems as they go along, and some of them are quite different from the other ones.
But how great would that be to have a hardware upgrade that just morphs into a new phone?
Made out of nanotechnology, liquid metal.
Anyway, speaking about upgrades, my GoPro crapped out. I used it 3 times.
Why do you buy these things?
Well, I bought it for the purpose of investigating the investment potential of this company. I want to see what the whole big game was all about and if it'd be interesting. So I used it maybe 2 or 3 times and, you know, got a couple of interesting videos.
Can I ask you, give you just a tip?
Yeah.
The batteries are dead.
I thought that was the case. But when I turned it on, the battery indicator was full, and it would go on, but then it just would freeze. Just freezes. Can't do anything else. So I took the battery out, I put the battery in, I took the smart card out, I put it back in. So now I'm going to do a full recharge of it and see if that was something to do with the battery.
It sounds like it's toast.
Yeah. I don't even know what to do with it.
Get a new one. Tell them that, dude, bitch.
Yeah, I will. I have it charging right next to me right here. I'll see.
It costs like $200.
$400.
$400. It's way overpriced.
Way overpriced.
For a little
square little camera thing.
I can get cameras that do the exact same thing for, you know, $40.
I mean, the only thing that's interesting is the casing and how it's really good underwater and things like that. But, you know.
Well, and actually the 1080i or 1080p thing that I think a lot of them have is you can't get for $40.
But. Right. So I'll have to send it back and see what happens. All right, so speaking about semi-technology, getting pretty rough out there with Uber. Have you seen what's been going on?
It's starting to become like the 30s or something with the union busters and the cab drivers. Yeah, it's going to get violent.
Yeah, there's been all sorts of violence that's happening in Belgium.
The Europeans are less amenable to these things than we are.
Yeah, this is kind of like the you know, 60s in the Bronx where you wouldn't drive your car in there because you knew you were going to get jacked. You know, somebody's going to open the door, pull you out and get in your car and go. I mean, this is, you mentioned the I'm thinking Chicagoland style of, you know, putting bombs under an Uber car, you know what I mean? Just kind of like, you know, filling it with all sorts of holes as they drive by, you know, it's getting ugly. And I think that, you know, the taxis, I mean, really think about that. All the taxis that are lined up at the various places, we've talked about this. And, you know, at least there's been 20 incidents where taxi drivers blocked Uber cars and they attempted to pick up passengers. They've been throwing eggs in some cases, dragging passengers onto the street. and they've just been doing some crazy things.
How do you spot a Uber car?
What you do is you set them up. What you do is you click a button and you you watch somebody.
Or
order one up and then you just, you know, drag the guy out. You an Uber? No, I'm not an Uber driver.
There's a couple of things you could do. You could throw a really old dead fish in the back seat.
Oh.
That's a good one. You can also put a gallon of water in the tank. That would mess the guy up big time. You could also just drag him. But that's, I think the fish and the water and some of these and eggs are more vandalism. I think if you beat the guy up, then you got some sort of misdemeanor felony kind of thing. So you have to be careful what you do.
Yeah, no. You have to be very stealth. Very stealth. What else is going on? Oh, Greece. Greece market's up to about 10% over the last few days. Seems that there is a deadline here, and it's a do or die at this point. Looks like that Greece is going to run out of money.
How often have we heard this exact same story on this show alone?
Yeah, well, this is going to be this because we're counting down. Now it's looks like, I guess about April. I guess the latest is April 15th. That's when the potential for Greece to run out of money entirely is going to happen, and they may default. Now, there's been a lot of meetings. This guy, Tsipras, the new prime minister of Greece, has been meeting with Angela Merkel. And she said, you have to stay in the union, and Greece is going to, big part of it, and we want to make sure we do everything. So she said a lot of good things the last few days. Meanwhile, they're burning, parts of Germany. All sorts of riots going on there because they're pissed off. And they don't want to spend any more money on this. Plus, they don't want to be in the in this whole austerity either. In Spain, there's all sorts of uprisings going on. France,
Spain's out of control.
Yeah, they've always been. So this is interesting. There's a lot of internal problems that are happening with this, and there's a lot of I think this is something they didn't count on. Meanwhile, Mario Draghi, the ECB guy, is like, oh, look how great our bond purchases are working, and it's starting to help and all that. Meanwhile, people are just awfully pissed over there. Just really pissed.
Yeah.
And in China, we're seeing that the economy is slowing even further. We saw that the factory index fell to an 11-month low. And this indicator that shows employment, new orders, and backlogs all weakened in the key manufacturing sectors, suggesting fourth quarter weakness in the overall GDP is about to happen. So it was down to 49.2. And this is a final reading in February. It was 50.7. 49.2 is under the 50, which is the contraction. So there's a lot of negative stuff going on in China. And I think one of the big reasons is that they really overpriced their whole design of what they do. I mean, how many companies have taken their major components and manufacturing businesses out of China and flipped them onto all these other Asian countries or emerging markets that are so much cheaper?
I have no idea.
Many.
I can't, I guess, yeah. I'm always surprised by some of the activity. These guys, some companies, I guess, make so much money, hand over fist, for example. General Motors decides just to walk from Russia. They have a Russian manufacturing facility, I guess, they put together, and they're just going to, I guess, abandon it. How can you afford to do that kind of thing?
I don't know. How can you afford to pay all these claims because of this bad ignition system and the stock doesn't hiccup? Because you're charging too much for your cars.
That must be it.
It has to be it. I mean, plus, don't forget, many of these companies have restructured their debt exposure. So let's say 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 10 years ago, they were issuing bonds and they're paying, let's say, 5 or 6% of those bonds, right? They could pay 4% these days, 3%. That's a big savings on an annual basis. And they're issuing bonds like you can't imagine, these companies. And debt is the highest it's been in years. But it's all at a lower rate. So if
it
a company...
makes more sense.
Yeah, so if a company cut their interest rate in half, they could double their debt exposure, have all that excess money on hand to do things like buybacks and dividends and payments of, getting rid of divisions and things of that nature. So I think it's a big part of things, that what's going on there. There's some interesting news I don't know what to make of this, but some strange things. I mean, this ISIS, Islamic State group, which is, being blamed for all this terrorist activities and beheadings and things like that, they've recruited 400 children in Syria in the past 3 months. They have, they're calling these the Cubs of the Caliphate. They have the Cubs. It's such a terrible.
These guys are in the more marketing than any terrorist organization I've ever heard of.
That's a good point. That's probably where the guys from Windows 95 went. You know, these guys are good at marketing. You got a good. Seriously, they are.
Jeez.
No, but they are good at marketing. As a guy, I never thought of it that way. They're excellent at it.
Oh yeah, Cubs.
The Cubs of the Would you like to? Hi, we're selling cookies for the Cubs of the Caliphate. So they're training in military, you know, military training and hardline indoctrination. It's kind of like what goes on in like Africa, doesn't it? With these crazy.
Well, that's what they say, Kony. Yeah. Kony, what was that? Kony 2012. You know, they're supposed to, guy, they made that movie and it's supposed to have captured this guy. It's 2015 now, by the way. And as far as I can tell, Kony's still out there.
Yeah, he hasn't been caught. I guess one of the things they also work on is social media. Now, social media has a lot of redeeming qualities, right? So it gets people together. It can produce mass information about news and things like that. It can do create all sorts of social awareness. Well, one of the things I think, and one of the great things that social media seems to be able to do, is help people learn. Well, two Maryland high school students have been accused of using Twitter to cheat on the Common Core state standardization tests. So a security firm hired by the test company to search social media, including Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, found two instances of cheating by 10th grade students. So the
how do you use Twitter to cheat?
It seems that some of these posts were included materials from the statewide English test. They were discovered in the past 2 weeks and were quickly taken down. And somehow, I guess somebody...
Oh, I know it. Yeah, somebody's got their phone and they take pictures of the test.
Right.
And then they post them.
Yep.
Yeah, it would work.
I don't know why they let phones in. When I was a kid, they wouldn't let calculators in.
I know. Calculators make sense to have in there because you have to use them anyway.
Right.
So what if you're good at using a calculator? You should be able to take the test with the calculator. I mean, obviously not when you're in the fourth or fifth grade, but, you know, when it's high school, college, I don't see any reason you shouldn't be able to use a calculator. The phone is a communications tool. It's not a calculation tool. I mean, it has a calculator in it.
Well, that's so
the
thing.
It should be used.
Right. It's a computer. You can't bring a computer to class. But, you know, the bigger the calculators, we used to use a couple classes, the HP 12C.
Yeah.
But they had a nice area on there where you could actually scratch some things in on pencil and then some formulas and stuff and then just erase them after you're done, you know, kind of just wipe them off.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, there was kind of a gold, copper gold area on top with just enough room. If you wrote small, you can write some. I heard this was the case.
Uh-huh, sure. You're Florida State, right?
Let's see what else we got here. Oh, speaking about schools, top-ranked business schools are raising tuition by about 4% this fall.
Yeah.
Do you know what a top-ranked business school costs on an annual basis?
Too much.
So the academics, on average, for the 2015-16 year are going to be about $60,000.
That's without books.
Without books, without room and board, fees, all that good stuff. If you add it all
up... For $60,000, I could hire Carl Icahn to teach me.
Right. But this is like $100,000 a year. You're going to end this, and again, depending on what you're doing, but it could be anywhere from $200,000 to $400,000, depending on...
Yeah, you better have it in cash, because if you take out those loans, you're going to be in debt for the rest of your life.
Unbelievable. You know, let's say you get out of school with $250,000 nut that you got to pay back. And who's got $250,000 just to throw around?
Listen, you better have it or you shouldn't take the school.
I have friends that the kids went to school. They were in the business program. This is undergrad now I'm talking about. And they were offered a job. I think they're making $90,000 right out of college, 4 year. $90,000 at JP Morgan. Not bad.
Well, it's still going to be troublesome if you have a $200,000 debt to deal with.
What were you getting? We talk about this sometimes. Your first job, how much did you make? Your first full-time job.
When I was a kid, my first full-time job. That doesn't include working full-time during the summer?
No. I'm talking about entering into the workforce kind of stuff.
Probably about 30 grand.
Well, it's not that bad. It's good.
No, it was actually good. I was a chemist. It was good money. I went to the air pollution district and I made, a little more. It wasn't that much, but this was a long time ago. And if you account for inflation, I think I was making more money then than I am now.
And it was easier to save then, wasn't it?
It was easier to save. You could go to Europe every year a couple times. Everything was seemed more normalized. Now everything's like, you know, it's not what it once was.
I remember
we're in the middle of a depression for all practical purposes, and you know, guys, you shouldn't be complaining if you're making anything.
I'm trying to think my first job, not part-time stuff and all that. I worked for Muzak on a part-time thing once.
Oh.
I had to deliver all sorts of elevator music stuff. I was driving a truck in Manhattan. This is a summertime job. It was horrible. Can you imagine driving a truck in Manhattan?
No.
All I know is the day that I clipped the mirror on the side was my last day. I said, I can't do this. First of all, you can't park anywhere, and you got to double park. And everybody around you is just honking their horns and pissed off as can be that you've had this gigantic truck on the side street blocking traffic. I'm like, oh, it'll just be a minute. And you got to open up the back, go in. But to get through those side streets, oh my, and this big, you know, not it wasn't a big truck, but it's a big box truck thing, you know?
Yeah, I know. It was annoyingly big.
I remember when I first got the guy says, can you drive this? I'm like, sure. So it was a stick, right?
Sure.
So get in it. And I started up, I put in first gear, and I go, and I just clunk out right in front of the guy. This happened like 5 times. I'm like, what is wrong with this thing?
The
emergency brake was on.
Yeah.
He couldn't get it going. So I'm like, all right, I'm on my way. And he's like, okay, bye. I'm like, I can't believe this guy's trusting me with this truck.
Truck.
You know? So I did that for 2 or 3 weeks. And I said, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. I had a couple of short-term jobs.
Yep.
Well, my favorite, if I'm going to talk about work, there was jobs were everywhere, and I was going to the University of California, so I got a job at the Milpitas Ford Motor Company plant, which was union wages, so this was seriously good money. But the next day, I also had applied for a job at Smirnoff Vodka, and so the next day, I said, well, hell, this is a really good pay, and it was a really good paying job. And I looked at the time that I was supposed to come to work for Smirnoff and the time I was supposed to work at Ford, and I decided that I could do both these jobs.
Mm.
So I started doing both jobs. I went from one job. When I finished, I drove to the other job, and then I came home and got as much sleep as I could.
Mm-hmm.
So I got I went through about a month of this, made a lot of money, about a month, and then boom, I got mononucleosis.
Oh, that's awful.
From fatigue or something, because I was killing myself. I didn't know it. I was, you know, living it up with all this money. And so, but luckily, I ended up getting disability for the rest of the summer from both companies. I was like in seventh heaven for the rest of the summer.
Yeah, but you were laid up for like a month, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can get by. You just have to be careful. You know, right. It's my problem was with the mononucleosis was the sore throat.
Oh.
Where anything with a pH that was just a little bit acidic, orange juice being the best example, what you might as well take a knife and jam it in your throat. It was the most painful thing you could imagine.
I remember, I had mono. I think I had it twice, actually, but I had mono. I think I was laid up for like 30 days or something like that. I watched my sister worked in a video store, and I think I saw every single video that was out. I mean, just a backlog of videos. But I remember this one time I went on a blind date with this girl, and I was about, maybe I was like 24 years old. And so I said to her, oh, so tell me, what do you do? She says, I take care of some kids, you know, I babysit. I said, oh. She goes, yeah, you know, I get tired easily. I said, oh, yeah, that's interesting. What is that? Well, I got something called Epstein-Barr syndrome.
Oh.
I'm like, which is like permanent mono. Right.
Yeah, except for the sore throat.
And I'm like, oh, and you know, mono is, and these are the days before the iPhone where I could look up things right on the. I got to kind of like think through history here, right? So I'm like, oh man, mono is like the kissing disease. They call it the kissing disease, right?
Right.
So I'm like, uh-oh. So like the night's going on. I'm like, oh boy, I don't want to. This is not going to go. I just said goodbye. She calls me up later that night. Oh, I had such a great time. I want to go out again. I'm like, oh no, that's not going to work out so well.
Well, you were afraid of getting Epstein-Barr from her?
I didn't know, but it just, you know, I can tell you stories about my, I had three blind dates. Let's put it this way. The last one ended up that 3 days later, I left the country for a week. I said, I'm done. Get me out of here.
You're dating a mafia don's daughter?
I had three awful blind dates, and it was from ex-friends that set me up, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And it was just a horrible experience. One worse than the next. Hmm. One worse than this. Funny stories, though. Very funny stories. Let's see. Okay, now, New York. Are you familiar with the whole bed bug situation in New York?
Yeah.
It's
There's
awful.
A whole bunch of websites about it.
You know, my daughter called me up, and she said, Dad, I think I have a bed bug in my apartment. I'm like, oh, no, come on. Your friend had it in a different apartment in the same building. You know, well, you probably just, you know, whatever you think. Meanwhile, she had a bed bug. They tell you to take it, and you put it in the freezer. I guess that's what kills them.
Why don't you just step on it?
That's what I said. I said, just because I guess they have eggs, possibly.
Oh, please.
And they have eggs, and the eggs go out and bad.
You get this vermiculite, or what is this material? It's like some mineral that you buy, and you just spread it around the area, and then the bugs, if they get, have to walk anywhere, they cut themselves to shreds on this stuff.
Well, you know how
they vacuum it up.
In New York, you get a bed bug inspector, like a, you know, a termite inspection kind of thing, right? But they have, this is unbelievable, they have bed bug dogs that come out and search the apartment.
Oh, that makes sense. Bed bugs apparently stink.
I guess so. So this dog comes out, and they find one in a crevice somewhere and somewhere else. Well, meanwhile, as soon as you have bed bugs, you have to pretty much take all the things you have and then go to a special bed bug laundromat, which does something to the clothing. Keep everything in bags for like 6 weeks. They powder the stuff. They do all the stuff in your apartment. And you got to live out of bags for like 6 weeks. And she is traumatized. So what does she do? She gets up. She gets all the stuff cleaned. She says she can't stay there. So she goes to a hotel the first night. Then she says, you know what? My cousin in Brooklyn says I can spend a few nights there. She goes over there. What do you think happens?
Bed bugs.
Bed bugs. Now she thinks she brought the bed bugs over there. Meanwhile, she's been sleeping there and somewhere else. So now there's a whole panic going on.
So she's the bed bug Lucy.
She's like the host. So meanwhile, we don't know if the bed bugs actually came from her in the other place, because they were in rooms that she wasn't there, and she was only there for 2 days. So maybe they had them to begin with. But you know, here's the problem. These things stick on anything, and you can go anywhere if you have one on you and just drop it somewhere. I mean, the incredible spreading of this whole little pain in the ass bug is unbelievable. So I found there's a bedbugregistry.com.
Yeah, I've seen that one. And it's got all the hotels in New York. You can look them up.
Yeah, it's all these charts of where bed bug sightings. What a terrible little thing. They're like, and they eat you. They bite you and eat your blood. It's horrible.
Yeah, they're bloodsuckers.
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather have mosquitoes that just attack me than that.
It's like any banker.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, in Utah, some big news in Utah. Big news. I don't know. Isn't Utah where the Mormons are? Isn't that Utah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Utah has become the only U.S. state to authorize the use of firing squads for executions.
Yeah, I think some. You know, I remember when I was a kid, there was a couple of states that you could choose firing squad or hanging.
Yeah, oh, well, that's good.
But then now all of a sudden it's like some new thing that Utah's got the firing squad. I think it was an old tradition in a lot of states. This doesn't surprise me, and it doesn't shock me.
Isn't it, you have like, let's say, five guys or gals, whoever it is, with guns that are going to shoot you, and one of them doesn't have a bullet, or one of them has a blank, so that
right.
you don't know if you're the one.
They all feel better.
Yeah.
Just so they don't feel bad.
Right.
Right, one of them has a blank.
I don't know how maybe they go afterwards and bet who had the blank.
You can't tell because the shell, the casing is going to look the same.
Mm.
You should be able to tell when you shoot it.
Yeah.
Because it won't have quite the kick of the, because it's a squib.
Yep.
But.
So that's pretty, I guess, because it's inhumane to kill people with an electric chair or hanging or other methodology besides lethal drugs.
Well, they can't, it's the drugs. They can't get the drugs anymore because no one will sell the drugs to anyone using them for lethal injections. It's the problem. It's a bunch of do-gooders in the pharmaceutical industry So they're going to shoot people.
Yeah.
Now, where do they shoot? Do they shoot them in the head? Are they headshots? Because you're close enough that you can easily hit the guy right in the forehead if you have a rifle. I mean, any 12-year-old could do that. You shoot for the heart? You shoot for the, you know, genitals? I mean, what do you shoot for?
I think it depends on what you did. If there's any kind of rape or any kind of sexual, you go right for the gonads.
Yeah, they shoot them twice. That's not going to kill anyone.
I don't know. I mean, I think that you shoot for the heart.
The heart's... that would sounds like you'd probably still live. I think you have to shoot for the brain.
Everybody has to shoot for the same area because that one blank. I mean, if everybody's shooting and somebody misses and it's the wrong place, if like half the people shoot for the head and half the people shoot for the heart, and the person with the heart misses one and the other one's the blank, that's a problem.
Well, I don't know how many people are going to have shooting.
How do you get to be a shooter? Do you volunteer?
Probably as a list, as a sign up.
Really? I think it's probably like hard to get into that club.
Well, how are you going to do it? You're going to ask the police department, ask the family of the victim, maybe, if it was a murder case? That would be interesting.
And you only get one shot. What happens if the guy's still alive?
Yeah, they should have I think they should use automatic weapons. And shoot off about 10 rounds, each person, and they just pummel the guy.
Why not just like lay him on top of like 5 hand grenades? And, I mean, what's wrong with that? Seriously.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's kind of messy,
obviously. It's a mess.
It's a mess. Okay, give you that. So, is there any other ways that seem like a little bit more palatable?
Well, I don't know why they don't use the guillotine.
Oh, no. See, that would be quick. That's painless. That's like a kosher thing. That's like, you know, you get the blood rushing to the head on the cow, you hang him upside down, and you slit his throat, and it's like instant death, no pain. They should probably follow that. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
That's kind of messy, too, though. I guess it's also not...
But you have a bucket.
Yeah. And that was used for years. In all sorts of regimes. But I don't think we've ever used that. You have the big guy coming with the mask. Would you use a guillotine or a guy that would use an axe?
I think the guillotine's better because it's the axe guys, they miss.
Yeah.
They have to hack away.
Oh, God, that's gross. So gross. Well, speaking of gross... This is pretty gross, this story. It seems that, and there's a lot of this going on, and I don't know who the people are that dig through this and really, but human feces seems to contain gold and other precious metals that can be worth hundreds of millions of dollars, experts say. So that means experts,
scammers
in human feces
mining.
Yeah, I guess. The trick is how to retrieve them, they say, a potential windfall that could help us save the planet. The gold was found.
Right.
The gold we. So this is. I have some questions about this. The gold was found at a level that is minimal mineral deposits, said Kathleen Smith, the U.S. Geological Survey, after her team discovered metals such as platinum, silver, and gold in treated waste. A recent study by another group of experts in the field found that waste from 1 million Americans could contain as much as 13 million worth of metals. I have a few questions about this.
Bull crap.
Yeah. First of all. How does that stuff get into human... I'm not talking about in the piles. I'm talking in a single person. How do you get any platinum, silver, or gold out of it? And why are people ingesting that? And how are they... It's not, obviously, they're not swallowing a ring,
okay,
obviously.
Here's a couple possibilities.
Okay.
So you've got a bunch of gold teeth, and you grind your teeth at night.
Okay.
You swallow the saliva, and a little piece of gold gets in there.
Yeah.
That's one.
Uh-huh.
Silver, the same thing, because you have teeth filled with silver. At least they used to do that more than they do now. And
doing shots of Goldschlager?
Yeah, that's a little bit of gold.
Yeah.
That's true. You get that in there. You might get some silver in your system through some sort of, through the skin somehow, maybe. I don't know how you get platinum in you.
So let me just read this
sounds
again.
Sounds like bullcrap. This whole thing. This is a recent study. April 1st. They ran it too soon.
A recent study by another group of experts in the field. Group of experts in the field.
Experts in the field. My favorite.
Yeah. Found that waste from 1 million Americans. How they found waste from 1 million Americans, by the way, can contain as much as 13 million worth of metals. Now, the problem is finding a way to extract the metals that could help the environment by cutting down on the need for mining and reducing unwanted release of metals in the environment. The findings were presented at the 249th National Meeting and Exposition of the American Chemical Society, the world's largest scientific society that took place in Denver. So I guess maybe they were eating or smoking something. As a, can you imagine making this presentation? Hi, we somehow garnered the amount of excrement from a million 1 million people.
1 million people.
Somehow they got their hands on this stuff, and we used rudimentary procedures, the old things they used to use in the rivers for getting gold. You know, the little screens. And very fine, and we found that we could have as much as 30. This whole thing is unbelievable. That the story is there, and that there was actually a report on this. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable. It's nonsense. Mm. I'd like to read the report.
Okay, well, and are you a member of this, the American Chemical Society?
No.
This is something you could be a member of.
I probably could. Mm.
All right, let's see what else we have on here. Oil, we talked about. 3-day rule, we talked about. That, we talked about. Okay, English tests. Utah. Well, I'm kind of out of material here.
Well, that's good, because then we can go look at the stocks.
Ended on a crappy note, didn't we?
Oh.
Oh, very bad. Very bad.
Boo.
Sorry. So let's go to the stocks. And this is a list of stocks that we have that we play a game. John C. Dvorak. Which you can follow him at The Real Dvorak on Twitter. Myself, Andrew Horowitz on Twitter. And this is a game that we play. We try to find sometimes some way out ideas, sometimes some really good, maybe technical, or maybe John likes his insiders. And we pick a stock and see how it does. And we have some rules, like a 10% stop, unless we say otherwise. It's not an offer to or a solicitation to buy or sell any security. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may own these stocks that we talk about, and we'll duly note that. And, of course, go and find some professional financial advice. And, by the way, on that note, I'm pissed off about something.
Okay.
So this new thing, there's something that's been brewing out there called robo-advisors.
Robo-advisors.
Yeah. So this is the whole idea that what the hell you need a financial advisor for? You know, people don't, you know, the millennials, they don't want to pay for it. They don't need it. You know what? We have algorithms that can create.
Millennials don't want to interact with people,
right,
either.
So now you have these algorithms, which I like, you know, some algorithms, the big word these days, it sounds like, wow, algorithm, it's some mathematical thing. So Schwab and a few other companies have come out with these robo-advisor platforms where you don't pay a fee, you don't pay any trading fees.
You get what you pay for.
They create a portfolio based on the quote-unquote algorithm, which is just a bunch of guys who are sitting there saying, okay, here's the world. We're going to give you 10% U.S. large cap, 10% small cap, a little bit of commodities. You know, go through this whole little procedure, and you just put your money in, let's say, and you want portfolio A aggressive, let's say, okay? You put your money in, your $10,000, your $20,000. You don't have to pay an advisor, and they'll rotate, and they'll do their thing with it. This is kind of a take on the asset allocation mutual funds of years ago.
Yes, that's exactly what it sounds like.
But they're making it out that what really pisses me off.
It's a robo, yeah. Robo doing it.
What really pisses me off is that I was in a room with Charles Schwab himself, probably about 20-something years ago, when he stood up there and said, we will never give advice and we will never be in competition with advisors. As they were soliciting advisors for the potential of creating the Schwab institutional platform. So obviously we know that wasn't good and he didn't make good on his word, but the fact of the matter is that there's a bunch of commercials out now that's like, what do you need advisors for? And I'm not just saying this because I am an advisor, and I'm not saying it because I'm threatened. I just think the whole thing is kind of like really cheap, and it's just a marketing ploy. That's
the
really
word you're looking for is tawdry.
Yeah, tawdry. Yeah.
Tawdry.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I think it's really sending a bad message because, you know, they're not, if markets melt down, they're not going to do anything but keep you invested.
You're going to lose all your money with this idea.
Yeah.
They'll never pull you out or put you in gold or anything.
Yeah, bad idea. Anyway, let's talk about some of the things that are going on. Some of the names that have been playing so well or continue to do so. Monster Beverage up 40%. TransDigm up 27%. Walgreens Boots just keeps on going up 43%.
That one even surprises me.
It's amazing. Let's see what else we have. Panera Bread is finally in the green, a short on Panera Bread, up 1.2%.
So I saw Panera Bread nearby. I didn't go in.
You should go in and see how gross it is.
I'm going to go in. I like the outside. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, pretty.
They got awnings that are silk screen and a nice logo, and the building is pretty and looks new.
Go order a soup and a piece of bread. The bread's fine. The soup tastes like it's out of a can.
It probably is.
Yeah. Or get a sandwich. It's like a Subway sandwich.
But it's Panera Bread. It says Panera Bread. I would go there to buy bread.
Yeah, right. I never thought of that. That's a good idea. I hate the place so much I never even thought about buying bread there.
It doesn't say Panera Bread and Sandwich Shop.
Right. And free internet, which is a big thing. Oh, by the way, Starbucks stopped their Race Together promotion.
Stupid thing. They got nothing but grief from everybody about
that. Yeah, they're like, oh, we only planned this to be a two-week thing anyway. We were planning on stopping it now.
Actually, John Oliver had the best line. He had that Schultz, the guy who runs Starbucks, telling about this thing. And after he gave the spiel to why they should do this so they can all talk about race, Oliver looks at the camera and says, here is a guy that for the last 25 years, apparently no one has ever said no to him.
Yep.
Because it's a dingbat, obviously surrounded by yes men, dingbat idea that only someone who's never said no. Anyway, I thought it was hilarious.
Yep. What else we got here? Interexon up 37%. Shake Shack got stopped. So did Synjivia got stopped for a bit of a loss. Twitter up 6.2% today. Broke over the $50 range. We got stopped on that, down 4%. TBT is down 9%. Bonds kind of rallying back. Idera down 9%. The Greek, we got stopped out on the Greek Global X ETF.
Yeah, but you made money.
Yeah, 19%. It was up like 28% or something like that. Mondelez, still leaking. Leaking ever since you bought it. Apple actually in the green, up 1.8%. National Bank of Greece. I bought that on the other side, right? So I shorted Greece and I went long National Bank of Greece. Up 8.5%.
Nice straddle.
And the rest of the stuff is just hanging in there. So we got about three or four things that got stopped out. One for a gain, one for just a slight loss. And Bank of New York Mellon doing great, up 7.9%. So I have a name that I'm adding to the list. I'm buying Lumber Liquidators.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think most people would be thinking of shorting it.
Yeah, I would short it too, but I think there's going to be a reprieve for a little while here, a possible bounce. Stock yesterday, I've been looking for this and happened to come right on the right day here. So the stock was up a little bit yesterday. It looked like it was going to start to squeeze, and there's a lot of people on the short side. When you ever see all those shorts, a lot of shorts in there, you want to start thinking about when the jig's up, when it does turn, if it turns, it doesn't go to zero. You're going to see a big ramp. One day, you're just going to see a kaboom. Now, it didn't turn yesterday. It tried to turn higher yesterday, but it ended up down about 3%. And today, it was very successful. It's up about 7% at one point today. Ended the day up 3.5%. I actually bought this for portfolios. So, actually, I shorted GoPro today as well.
You going to put it on the list?
I can put it on the list. I can put GoPro on the list.
Yeah, go ahead so we can follow it.
GPRO. Enter. Yeah, well, it didn't get exactly towards my level of let me come clear this, push this. It didn't get exactly at my 45, but it's been going so many times. Oops, Control V. Oh boy, screwed that up. Control C. What was Apple? Control V. There we go. GoPro. Okay, just bad. That's what I'm writing down. It's bad. All right. And I have this right here. All right. What do you got?
Well, I got a couple things to look at. And now this, I don't like this one, but I'm going to mention it. This guy, Duncan Randall Williams. I don't know what his real name is, but he's the director of Enterprise Products Partners, which is EPD, which is an oil and gas operation of some sort. This is something people should look at. First he invested $50 million in the stock at 34, and then it went down. I don't know how you put $50 million in small stock like this that goes down. And so now he's invested $100 million.
Wow.
So this guy's a splurger. Now, with the price of oil fluctuating the way it is and the this is the most speculative thing I've ever seen. I wouldn't get on this. I'm only talking about this to show that my decisions to buy insider traded stocks, there's some logic to it. There's no logic to this. I would not touch this thing with a 10-foot pole unless there's some merger coming up. Mobile's going to buy them. I that's possible, and he knows. But this just looks like craziness to me.
Well, this is natural gas. This is they own and operate natural gas liquids related businesses of Enterprise Products Company. So this is kind of a
A fracker.
Yeah, but this is probably. But they do the liquid natural gas, which is different than just natural gas. It's compressed.
Yeah, you compress it and then you can transport. And
you can transport, exactly. So the company's a provider of midstream energy services to products. So they also do services for these companies, like a Halliburton.
Yeah, that's the impression I get.
The Kinder Morgan. What else do you get here? Enbridge Energy Partners. So, these guys are more onshore gas and oil. So it's interesting. I mean, if you ever see that.
I'm not saying this is not a good company to invest in. But it's down from close to 40. And it's just dropped. And this guy's, it looks to me as though he's supporting it. And with his really heavy duty buys. And I think he's just a director too. He's not even a.
It's only 30% institutional owned. Earnings per share of $1.47, where it makes the PE 21.5. It's a $63 billion company.
What happened? Never heard of them.
What happens to the $1 million companies? You know, $500 million. What happened to that?
There's no such thing.
You know, a $3 billion company. No, $63 billion company.
Yeah,
trades about 3 million shares a day. 52-week high is 41 and change. 52-week low is 30 and change. And they pay a dividend about 37 cents. Is that an annual? It looks like annually.
Dividend. Now here's another.
Yeah, once a year.
Yeah, here's another reason I wouldn't.
Oh, no, they pay this quarterly.
What's the percentage? What's the dividend percentage?
The dividend is 37 times 4, so it's 3, 1, 2, about 4%.
Oh, that's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be a bad investment for that. Whatever the case is, I don't like this guy's style because he's a another his play, most play in October, November, I guess, of last year, and I guess December, he sold. Well, here he sold 825 million, 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 2 million, 2 million, 2 million. He sold everything he had pretty much at $37 of Energy Transfer Equity, LP, which is a pipeline company. ETE is the symbol. The stock is now at 62. So he dumped God knows how much money. And the stock's at 62, and he dumped most of his stock at 37.
This is W. Randall Fowler. Is that his name?
No, it's Williams. His last name is Williams, and it's like Randall Duncan Williams.
Another Randall Duncan Williams. There's a W. Randall Fowler, chief.
No, there's no Fowler here.
Interesting. The company seems to have some good. First of all, there's 6,900 employees. Net profit margin about 6.6. Operating margin 9.04%. It has a return on average equity of about 15.6. This makes it a pretty good company.
I didn't say it was a bad company. I just question this guy's ability to, insofar as timing is concerned.
Right.
Well, and I would keep an eye on the company if it goes down to where maybe it's going to head with that big dividend. If it gets to 5% or something like that, it'd be an interesting investment.
And what other companies you have?
Well, okay, so that one's out.
Okay.
I just wanted to discuss it.
Gone.
Okay, where's the other ones here? I was looking at, this one's good. But the problem is, I'm this one. You should look at the chart of this one.
Okay.
This is GNCA, Genesis Biosciences, and this is not a big insight. I mean, the guy that's buying is a director. He has no track record whatsoever in insider trade, in insider buying and buying and selling. This seems the only thing he's ever bought, and this is he's bought almost a million shares, $5 million worth of the company. This GNCA. And the only thing that's attractive to me about this, besides that we've got some guy who never does this, is the chart. This thing looks like a rocket ship.
Well, recently, I mean, it was terrible for a while. It's down 26% over 1 year, 5 years up 8%. But recently, in the last 1 month, it's gone from 9 to 12. But that's with, I mean, all of them. Look at, I give you a couple of other stocks that are just ridiculous in this bio space.
Yeah, biospace is crazy.
It's like going crazy because everybody thinks, oh my God, who's the next one?
Well, the other one on this list is RXDX, which is Ignita, I guess is the name. And that's another biotech company. And it's another guy who bought $4 million worth of it as a director. And he's not a big trader at all. I've never seen, he doesn't do anything, as a matter of fact. But he went and bought in big time. So these two are potential stocks to put on the thing. But I don't want to load up with biotech. But I think I only have one left on there, two.
This one looks interesting because they do some targeting for tumors that are, they have two different products, the RXDX 101 and 102. The company also has three discovery stage programs, Spark 1, Spark 2, and Spark 3, directed to oncology targets identified through mining of its database of information from tumor samples called Oncolome. And operating. There's 45 employees here. San Diego.
It's a small operation.
Yeah, pretty small. Yeah, it's only worth $200 million.
Ugh.
Only. But.
So I want to put one of these two on.
Let me just look at the last one here, the Genosia. Let me see what they do here. There's some clinical stage stuff as well as early stage and stuff with chlamydia.
Well, that's a big. There's a growing market.
Yeah, and malaria.
That's Gates money.
And pneumococcus.
Well, let's get that one.
Yeah.
Let's put that on there.
They have all sorts of. That's a GNCA.
Yeah, and I do like the chart, but it could be it could continue on this pace. It would be pretty cool, and it does happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can tell you there's some that. Let me see the price on this here. Hold on a second, let me put this in here. Loading buy. Oh, what's the price? Oh, it's at 11. Okay, one of the things that's interesting. There's another look at the symbol ANTH. So I saw this stock, and there was a long, I think I told you about this, Anthera Pharmaceuticals. It's trading at, and it's even more, it's up at 490. This thing, it dipped down recently to 4, and I'm like, oh man, I should get, or close to 4, I should get this. I picked it up at about 2 and change, and sold it at, I don't know, I think $3.50, $4. And then it went up to like, I don't know, 6 or something like that. Year to date, it's up, 200% year to date. And it popped
up. It's a penny stock.
A lot of companies need to have a certain price, like $5, to stay listed on a certain exchange.
Right.
So it seems to me that there was a big public offering on March 23rd, and they brought down the stock because of it from like whatever it was, 6 down to, it was as low as like $4.10. And now it's moving back up because they need to keep this listed. There was some issue with listing it.
In January, it was $1.50.
Yep. I saw this thing moving. It was I'll tell you a story one day. It was a weird situation. I saw all of a sudden it moving on a couple different feeds I saw, and somebody out of the blue mentioned this to me. I'm like, why am I seeing this name all of a sudden all over the place? And, it's moving.
Yeah, I'm looking at the chart. It has all the earmarks of a pump and dump.
Possibly.
Because it's got that spot there at 325. It flies, yep. And then it comes bouncing down ready to just... Yeah,
look at the volume starts moving up really heavy here compared to what it was. You got 1 million when it was only back when it was like 100,000, 60,000, 80,000, 200,000. Now it's in the millions. So, all right, well, we'll put this one on there. We'll put the GNCA on there. We'll put the insiders. All right, we'll keep track of it.
All right, good.
All right, I'll talk to you next week. Good man.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.